Janae, and Gola Jr., the podcast.
What we've seen so far indicates results may vary for one of the more talented NFL rookie quarterback classes we've seen. How do they shake out? Well, we'll get to that here coming up soon. Jeez. Janae and Gola Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll talk to Dan Orlovsky about some rookie quarterbacks coming up in a little bit. And while all of the college football news is alliances today that we've seen going on between the ACC, Big Ten, and Pac-12, we'll head to SEC country for some interesting news there as they continue to lead the way. But Mike Golic Jr., Katie George filling in for Janae Agwumike today. And Katie, I mean, have we formed an alliance here on the show? Is that basically how we have to present this from here on out? No sort of contracts or anything, just a good bit of eye contact and a nice handshake agreement here.
Are you looking me deep into my soul right now?
Dead in the eyes right now. Here.
Then yes. Yes, sir, we can form this alliance.
What you do have is my word. Stronger than oak.
Stronger than oak, yes. Right there. You don't got to worry about us going anywhere around here. Trust me on that. Now,
nope. We'd rather work together than stab each other in the back, as Andrea Adelson said.
Yeah, what a great binary presented when we had Andrea Adelson on earlier in the show here. When asked about what comes from this or was this necessary for them to come out with those lines, responded, well, it's better than them stabbing each other in the back, which I guess presented with those two options. I don't like knives that much here. I got a good cutlery set at home, but that's probably where we'll leave all this one. So we'll get to more alliance talk for you guys later on here. Janae Golic Jr. is brought to you by Indeed. Hire right now, right now. Visit Indeed.com/credit. We did have NFL football going on, though, last night. Monday Night Football felt right at home, Katie. We had the Jags and the Saints on TV, and I know it's not great football, especially not played by Jacksonville. But man, Jameis Winston lit it up early and often in that game last night. We saw Jameis going deep, something that Saints office has missed for a while now for the last few years. But Sean Payton still very, very hesitant to go ahead and do the thing, naming a quarterback and naming a starter. Here was the Saints head coach in their press conference talking about how he's handled the quarterback battle.
When we know what direction we're going, we'll let you guys know. And we're not going to, you know, try to anticipate saying, hey, it's going to be midweek or next week. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the best way for us to handle it. And it's kind of how we've always handled something like this. But I was pleased with not just the quarterbacks. I was pleased with how we played as a team for the most part.
Katie, statistically, both quarterbacks looked like they put on good nights. But Jameis Winston looked like the quarterback of the Saints. Can you understand what the holdup is for Sean Payton here? Because I can't.
I don't know. I feel like all these coaches are doing this right now, right? They're doing this slow dance into finally making a decision. But my goodness, the timing was right for Jameis Winston to throw that deciding punch, right? You and I were on the show yesterday previewing the game between these two teams. And it was kind of neck and neck in terms of Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston. Both are playing well. They're taking care of the ball better through preseason camp. But neither one of them had actually thrown that deciding punch. Well, last night, I think Jameis Winston did just that. My goodness, we were talking about the fact that this is a guy who can sling it, right? And he's had his accuracy issues, and that's why the Tampa Bay Buccaneers eventually moved on from him. He wanted another chance, and that's why he went to the New Orleans Saints. And last night, he put that arm talent on display. Marquez Callaway, my goodness, those two catches for touchdowns were remarkable, but the throw had to have been there. And Jameis Winston threaded those needles twice to Marquez Callaway. And I think those plays show you the potential, right? Like, there's got to be some risk to have high reward. Jameis Winston gives you that. To your point, Hill was fine, good, put together good numbers when he got his turn. He didn't turn the ball over, which was nice to see both of them progressing in that area of their games. But I think Jameis Winston has that higher ceiling. You know what you're going to get from Hill. Maybe he can get on the ground, use his feet, maybe show flashes of brilliance on the ground like that. But I just think that you got to go with Jameis Winston because that upside in what we saw last night with the deep ball is there.
It is, and I think that's got to be the difference for them, Katie, because I know we can't grade this properly against what is a young and bad Jacksonville defense here. I'm not saying you should take the result of this as gospel, But we have a body of work, especially on Jameis, but we got one last year. You brought up yesterday the couple of starts that Taysom Hill made last year when Drew Brees was out. The reason was to get a more extended look at him in game action, in real game regular season action here. So what we saw yesterday, Jameis 9-10 for 123 yards here, 12.3 yards per reception. Taysom Hill 11 for 20, a buck 38, 6.9. It's more of that short stuff here. And this offense, especially this year, Katie, I think is going to need that because of who's not going to be out there. Michael Thomas, your best receiver, you could argue the best player on that team, ain't going to be on the field for a while after that offseason foot surgery that happened a little too late in the calendar for them. And so if you don't have the guy that can do everything, you need an offense that's going to be able to do everything. The last few years, we've seen everyone frustrated because it's been 20 yards in with Drew Brees' dying arm strength late in these seasons here. At least with Jameis, you know, man, if the rest of this offense can peel back some of these mistakes, which it looks like he's worked hard to try and iron out, you have an offensive line that can give him time, and you have a quarterback with an aptitude for the deep ball that I think they're going to need even more this year.
And the attitude to lead these guys, right? If his performance in the first half of that game wasn't enough, he goes to the podium after the game to talk to media members, and he said, "I haven't started a football game in so long. I was so excited to just get an opportunity to start and lead the pack, man." This is a guy who easily could be bitter, who could say, "I was wronged. The fact that the Buccaneers moved on from me." He could hold resentment, right, to the people that he feels scorned by. He doesn't have any of that resentment. He has moved on. He's allowed that experience to humble himself. And he's also looked in the mirror and said, "I need to be better. There are a lot of areas of my game that I need to improve if I'm going to be the guy again for a different franchise." I love that about his personality, the fact that he was willing to humble himself, and the fact that he's just excited to go out and lead a group of guys again. That's endearing as a teammate.
It is endearing as a teammate, and it is what he came here to do, right? This is why he chose this job in particular, coming to New Orleans, over some other places that might have been options, where maybe he could have gotten on the field sooner. And so when you look around for the status of this team, it's also important to consider because the rest of this roster is Super Bowl ready. Like we talked about how thin the wide receiver room is. Marquez Callaway might have something to say on the top end about that, but the defense is stacked all over the place. And so now that you've had the Hall of Famer finally say goodbye at quarterback here, what you do next matters a lot for the immediacy. This could be another playoff caliber team again this year. And Chris Canty from ESPN 98.7 in New York was on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning and used the word scary to describe what Jameis could be in this offense.
"He saw something down the field. It looked like he wanted to take a shot at it, but then he thought better of it, and he decided he was going to check the ball down to Tony Jones. Now, even though it was an incompletion, that decision to not try to push the ball into a coverage where it could end up being a turnover-worthy play, like to me, that shows the growth and maturation of the quarterback, and that has everything to do with being able to get with Sean Payton and watch Drew Brees up close and personal last year. So if Jameis can show that type of restraint, if he can avoid making those critical mistakes and then continue to challenge all three levels of the defense the way that he did last night, I just think that that makes this New Orleans Saints offense a problem once we get to the regular season."
And I agree with Chris there. Mm-hmm. That could be a very scary team here still. But coming up next, I want to stick with something that he mentioned there. How much coaching mattered in that situation? Because when we start to look at this rookie class here, I think there's a couple fan bases that should be terrified for what that means for their team. That's next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. It's Chene and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Katie George. We got Dan Orlovsky coming up in about 10 minutes here. And Katie, you raised the question during the break here. Dan's a great football mind. I want to talk to him about some of the rookie quarterback stuff we're going to get to here because he's got very real concerns that I agree with that we'll get to here. You've got even more important concerns, though, as we look up at the screen in NFL Live and are horrified by the fashion choices.
Yeah, I just had a question being a woman. Is the golf shirt with the golf collar allowed to be worn under a jacket, a blazer? Is that allowed?
You know what, Katie? I don't know the answer to that. I'm not a very fashionable guy myself, but I certainly have never trotted out that combination here. It begs the question for me, though, because I know I went through this. My dad's been a married man for a long time, has worked in this job, has worked in TV. My mom always picked out his clothes. Like, he couldn't do that on his own. So I need to know if Dan's wife is picking this out for him or not before I'm too critical.
Based on your mom's Twitter presence, I feel comfortable allowing her to take the reins on that. I feel like Dan's wife has so many kids to look after and watch that I don't know if she has time to pick out his clothes, and therefore you're seeing the golf shirt blazer combo, which, by the way, I don't support. I'm just gonna say, unless you're putting on a green jacket after you just finished 18 holes, I don't think that you should put a blazer over top of a golf collar.
Katie, of the two of us, you are the only one here who's allowed to make a fashion ruling on things. I wear t-shirts and jeans every day, so I
you stay in your lane, though, which is important.
I it's like Hitch. I know where I got to be right here. You don't got to make any pizza at the party.
This is
they
the
got
home
food
base.
Here. Right in here. Stay right in here. So we'll get to the bottom of all these hard-hitting issues and more with Dan Orlovsky in about 10 minutes here on Chanae and Golic Jr. You can hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed, at Mike Golic Jr. and at Katie_George05. So, Katie, we talked a lot about the Jameis Winston portion of last night's game in Monday Night Football. I want to look at the number one pick, Trevor Lawrence, because he's kind of emblematic of what we've always got to watch out for, because I saw Dan Orlovsky list the five rookie quarterbacks and the spots that they ended up with, and he singled out Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence in particular. I would argue the two best quarterbacks that were picked in this class as not being helped out by their coordinators here, not being in a spot where creativity-wise, coaching-wise, they're being put in a position to win. And it reminded me that we've seen historically, there's going to be a couple of these players that because of the organization they landed in, their careers were ruined, that we never got to see the full potential for these guys. After watching last night, Katie, how concerned are you that that might happen for Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville? Because it looked borderline dangerous for him out there.
Yeah, it did. I'm pretty concerned, and I try to tread lightly, right? Because it's a preseason game, and so you're not seeing everybody at full strength. But at the same time, these are still professionals, and when they're put into a system that allows them to succeed, you still get a good product. I mean, the pocket collapsed too quickly, too often around Lawrence last night. I mean, he was scrambling for his life on a couple of those plays, took a couple sacks as well, and then his wide receivers weren't helping him out either because they were struggling to get separation when running their route. So I felt like Trevor Lawrence was kind of on an island out there. Of course, you're going to have growing pains as you make this transition from college to the pros. But my goodness, you also got to think that the veteran players around you are going to be able to help you bridge that gap. Now, they were without starting center Brandon Linder, who was out with a knee. They were without starting left guard Andrew Norwell as well. But I don't know if you have some of those guys in place, if that's going to fix the problem, right? Is it a plug in and pull kind of situation, or is it just the system that you're in isn't going to work at this level? That's where I'll leave it to you, and I'll leave it to Dan to answer in the next segment.
Yeah, so the interesting part with all of this is also going to be the coaching element of all this, because you're right. You mentioned that line's going to get better in front of him just by getting healthier here. Even in the middle, the edges could be a different story. But we saw an offense that was really unimaginative. And, man, I know we get vanilla in the preseason. But when your quarterback's running for his life, it would be a good time to bust out something, anything, that might help him here. Now, this was Urban Meyer, Jacksonville's head coach, assessing his team's performance after a game where he looked quite miserable on the sideline.
Thought we protected him a little bit better. I think there's only one sack, if I remember right, for the night. Yeah, we got a, you know, DJ Chark. I'm counting on him to get back and give us a little vertical threat down the field. I didn't, you know, Philip Dorsett's got great speed. We gotta start getting the ball. And that was the plan, and we just didn't execute in the run game and then the throw game. We just wasn't much rhythm in the first half.
Katie, this feels so weird to say because watching the way this was handled, and a lot of people were making comments about Urban Meyer's sideline demeanor. Obviously, his past track record with sticking around at jobs or not certainly kind of gives him away and invites people to make a lot of jokes at that expense. But I was watching last night and seeing the response this morning, whether it's him, whether it's decision to not start Justin Fields right away in Chicago behind a shaky offensive line. And I said, oh my God, I'm actually more worried about these two quarterbacks. I would argue the two most talented quarterbacks in the draft having their careers ruined by these organizations than I am about the Jets potentially ruining Zach Wilson. Like, Zach Wilson has actually been encouraging. Mm-hmm. What Mike LaFleur and them have done on offense with him this preseason has instilled confidence in me despite the fact that I know they're going to be a bad team. So I don't know what bizarro world I'm living in where I'm actually more confident in the Jets and how they're handling this situation than I am these other two teams.
But gosh, so much of it rides on where you go, where you're drafted, who the coaches are, who the coordinators are, what systems in place, right? Like, I think of Lamar Jackson, somebody that I went to school with at the University of Louisville. He fell through the first round. My goodness, what a great situation for him, though, to be selected by the Baltimore Ravens. And that's been a happy marriage with Lamar Jackson and Harbaugh up in Baltimore, and he's found success. Yes, of course, he hasn't gotten to the ultimate goal, which is a Super Bowl, but he's a product of his system and the coaches that he's got around him. I think the same thing about Patrick Mahomes, right? He's a product of where he went in the draft, who he sat behind for a season, and the coach that he plays for. So often your success is based on those facts. And unfortunately for Trevor Lawrence, just through a couple preseason games, it hasn't looked great. I didn't think Gardner Minshew, who's considered somebody who's been in the league, more of a veteran, I didn't think he looked great. Who knew that it was going to be C.J. Beathard, who came in as the third stringer for the Jags, who was going to march them to two touchdowns in the final 5 minutes? Like, I wouldn't have thought that situation. That's the best they looked last night, was in the final few minutes of the games. That's not going to cut it, though, when you just took Trevor Lawrence number one overall.
It's not going to cut it, and I think it was through no fault of Trevor last night.
No.
He made some exceptional plays. There were some balls turned loose that I legitimately gasped watching during his time on the field out there. But it's one of those things you look around and say, you know what, this year, based on what your team looks like here, hey, man, Daryl Bevel and company, you might want to just turtle shell this thing around Trevor Lawrence and make sure you get this out of him alive so you can address some of the other things. Because this is going to be, probably behind Houston, the second worst team in the NFL this year. Now, is there a solution that can help these quarterbacks out now? How do you try and go about managing an asset like this? We will talk to one of our favorite quarterbacks next about what he'd do for a couple of the best quarterback prospects in this draft. We'll do that with Dan Orlovsky after this word from DoorDash. Now, guys, DoorDash is here with the summer of Dash Pass. Right now, Dash Pass members are taking $10 off groceries, alcohol, pet food, and more. You need a nightcap? Boom, $10 off. You got a cough? Get relief delivered for less. You want to surprise your crush? Baby. Go ahead and send a gift and save. Being frugal is sexy. Don't get it twisted. Try Dash Pass for free and get special savings, exclusive menu items, and $0 delivery fees all year round. Get more from your neighborhood now with Dash Pass in the DoorDash app. And stay cool out there. Terms and conditions apply. Dan Orlovsky and Fashion Sense. Collision Course next on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
As we get closer and closer to week one, there's a lot of quarterbacks that might already be starting to panic looking around at the team they've got with them here. Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Katie George were presented by Progressive Insurance. And we'll try and fix some of those situations because we think we got a guy with the answers. Dan Orlovsky, our ESPN NFL analyst, is with us here on the Goodyear Hotline, former NFL quarterback. And before we get to any of that, Dan, we were looking up. We saw a great picture. You, Laura Rutledge, Mina Kimes in studio together for NFL Live. Katie George has a question about your fashion, and I want to first make sure I know this before I'm complicit in any of this. Does your wife pick out your clothes for you when you go on air?
Yes, 99.9% of the time, yes. There are moments or days when my wife, I forget to ask her. She, you know, I just have to get out of the house quickly, but 99.9% of the time she does.
Did she pick out your outfit today?
I'll let you comment on the outfit before I answer that question.
Go ahead,
Katie. I was curious. I didn't know where we fell on the golf shirt collar underneath the blazer jacket collar. It was a lot of collar.
Yeah, no, it looks amazing. I get that. Button downs also have collars, so it would be the same thing.
I actually picked out
today's outfit. I wanted
that
to wear.
That makes sense.
I wanted to wear my Pine Valley shirt to show off since I'm a new member there. Okay.
Ooh, okay. All right. Well, there we go. All right, so
no,
this was
no,
clearly
I'm not a new member there. I'm not a member at any golf course. I'm a loser, dude.
Listen, your word's not mine, Dan. I love you dearly, and I would never say such things about you around here. And I'm also glad that we asked the right questions before this, because I was not going to criticize any outfit that your wife picked out, because she is way cooler than you. So Dan Orlovsky joining us now on the Goodyear Hotline. He knows it's true, so he won't say anything otherwise either. But that's good on him there. Dan, someone who may be questioning their partnership right now could be Trevor Lawrence here. It was a rough outing, man, last night. That guy was running for his life here. What do the Jaguars need to do to try and ensure long-term success for Trevor Lawrence right now? Is there a change that needs to be made here?
No, I mean, their roster is poor right now, specifically up front. We know that this is a bottom 10 offensive line. We know that this is a long rebuild for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Am I concerned about the offensive scheme and where it's going? Absolutely. I think it's a conversation that you have to start having with yourself as a head coach going, did I put the right people in place to not only play Trevor Lawrence, but develop and grow Trevor Lawrence? And for the people that are sitting there telling me, because I'm watching last night's game and going, my gosh, this offensive scheme is terrible. Trevor Lawrence, the average time to throw the ball last night, meaning how long he held on to the football, was 3.17 seconds. The average in the NFL is 2.6. They're calling these plays like he's Matt Leinart, you know, a statue quarterback instead of this freak athlete. And everyone's going, well, it's the preseason. It's supposed to be vanilla. Guys, the two people in charge of calling their offense are Daryl Bevel and Brian Schottenheimer. They've been in the NFL for 30 years. You don't think there's tape of who they are as offensive minds or play callers? You think they reinvented an offense in 7 months? Like, miss me on the whole they're being vanilla thing. My second thing is this. If you were being vanilla as an offense last night, and let's say they're not showing anything of what they're going to do, why was the head coach so emotional? Because if I'm the head coach and I orchestrate my guys to go be very bland because we're saving it for the regular season, I'm not going to be so emotionally tied to the results, but Urban Meyer was. And I just think the offensive line needs to get better. The scheme needs to get very much so modernized. And then they need to unhandcuff Trevor Lawrence.
Well, Coach, today, Dan, who was not emotional when announcing his starting quarterback for week one, was Matt Nagy, saying that Andy Dalton will be the week one starter. Is it a mistake not starting Justin Fields?
I would start Justin Fields. I think that's a mistake, yes. I think Matt Nagy has to start Justin Fields because very rarely in the NFL do you as a head coach get a second opportunity to groom a young quarterback. The same with their general manager, Ryan Pace. I do believe that they both need to win and win early this year to save their jobs. Now, the Chicago Bears as an organization, the owners, they should not play Justin Fields. They can't because their offensive line is so poor. My thought process as they announced Andy Dalton today is, well, one, when and what and why is Justin Fields then going to play? When and what and why? Because is it going to be, oh, we started 0-2 or 0-3? Hey, Justin, now you can go play. Now it's okay for you to play. Get lost. Or, oh, Andy Dalton's struggling. Now you got to go play. You expected something different? And I go back to last season, guys. This is a football team that last season was 2-0 on the road in Atlanta. Mitchell Trubisky up until that point had thrown for 6 touchdowns and 3 interceptions, and they benched him. So you told me last year that it wasn't dependent on wins and losses when it came to the quarterback move. And then you told me last year it wasn't dependent on the quarterback's performance because he wasn't lighting it up. He was playing okay. He didn't deserve to be benched. So what is going to be the line of demarcation, the trigger point that says, hey, we got to go to Justin?
It's going to be a mystery. Dan Orlovsky with us here on Chenea and Golic Jr. on the Goodyear Hotline, our ESPN NFL analyst, Mike Golic Jr. and Katie George here. I'm not sure what the line is there, Dan, but that's kind of where we're at with a number of these quarterback situations right now. There's been a lot of battles around these rookie quarterbacks here. We've talked about some of the tougher ones on the bottom end. When you look at this class, where we're at right now at this point in the preseason, which one of these guys is positioned to have the best success immediately?
Oh, Trey Lance. Trey Lance is positioned to have the best. I don't even put him in the conversation, though, Gojo, because I think it's unfair. Like, I believe it's unfair to put him in the conversation because that team is so good and that coach is so ridiculous that I'm not putting him into the conversation. If I took him out, I'd actually say Zach Wilson with the New York Jets. And that's a little bit surprising if you think about what the Jets have been over the last 6 or 7 years. But I think young quarterbacks need three things to go play as talented as, or go reach their talent in the NFL. One, they got to have people to throw the ball to. Corey Davis is a good receiver. Elijah Moore is going to be an absolute rock star. So I like their skill position guys specifically on the outside. Two, they got to have people to block. You know, Mekhi Becton's awesome. Vera Tucker is really good. So their offensive line is going to be way better than anything, say, a Sam Darnold had. And then three, they got to have a scheme and a play caller that is not only very good, but understands it's 2021. And Mike LaFleur, while it's his first time, comes from a really good pedigree and really good tree of coaching and offensive philosophy. And for those reasons, outside of the general manager, I think, being very good in the head coach, I think Zach Wilson with the Jets.
Dan, is 3 days enough time for Mac Jones to unseat Cam Newton as the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots?
Absolutely, because this is a competition that was incredibly close. And the only reason that Mac Jones isn't the starter is because Cam never opened the door. Cam had been just as good, if not slightly better. And this now opens the door. And playing in the NFL, specifically in New England, is a meritocracy. You earn it. And if he goes out over the next 3 or 4 days and he looks better than Cam does with the starters, and that offense looks better than Cam makes it look with the starters, and then they go on the road and practice against the Giants in a joint practice, and it looks better than it did or would have with Cam Newton, and then I think he's going to start week 3 in the preseason because Cam will only have a day of practice, and he looks really good, it's going to be really hard to sit there and go, we're not better off, not only now, but in November with Mac Jones.
And I think in a lot of these cases, you're right, it's about what kind of football do you want to be playing late in the season and which of these guys gives you the best chance to do that. Check Dan out on NFL Live each and every day around here. Nice to see him, Mina Kimes, Laura Rutledge, all getting to break bread together at the same table here. Good to have that crew back in here. Dan, always a pleasure, buddy. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, Dan.
Later, squad. Be good.
Awesome stuff there from Dan. And listen, the fashion – listen –
I knew he dressed himself.
I like that he put you in a bind on that one, though, here. He was going to make you try and slander his wife on air.
I was going for it, but I don't think any wife puts the golf shirt underneath the blazer. I'm just saying.
It's probably right. And again, just seeing the dynamic they present publicly here, I know Dan's wife's got a lot better stuff in the bag than that. She seems to be the cool one in the relationship here. So awesome stuff there. Coming up next, though, let's head back to college and check in on the state of this alliance here. A big announcement earlier today, and one that may actually trump it coming from the place they were responding from. That's next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Katie George filling in for Jhené Egwumike. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And our thanks to Dan Orlovsky, our ESPN NFL analyst, for clearing up all of our confusion around his fashion choices today, confirming that his wife does in fact dress him, but didn't today when Katie George decided to criticize his wardrobe here. So we all escaped alive.
I wasn't criticizing. I was just asking a question.
God, that is the old Dan Le Batard trick here. I'm not saying anything critical. I'm just asking the question here. Because Katie, you sounded awfully critical when we were in the break.
Oh, we're bringing conversation from the break to the air. I thought this was a... You looked me in the eye. You looked me in the eye and said, this is an alliance, young man, and we virtually shook hands.
What you do have is my word, and it's stronger than oak.
Clearly, we've seen what that handshake agreement can mean right now. God, this does not bode well for the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the ACC here, who entered into a similar handshake agreement today. I'm going to tell you here... Everyone should be nervous as a part of college football's alliance right now. Katie,
how
I apologize.
Quickly you stabbed me in the back.
Well, for anyone that missed where all this backstabbing comes from here, let me play you Jim Phillips, the ACC commissioner, because we did have a nice press conference earlier today. Everyone got dressed up. They got on Zoom. George Klefkov, the commissioner of the Pac-12, chose not to wear a tie, which I thought was interesting here. But Jim Phillips,
it's West Coast.
I say that Cali guy had to just kind of vibe check everyone in the Zoom chat here. But
still wasn't a golf shirt.
That is true. It still was not a golf shirt. And for that, we are thankful. We're even more thankful that Jim Phillips from the ACC, their new commissioner, gave us this soundbite because these three conferences came together after Texas and Oklahoma decided to leave for the SEC. Something had to be done, and Jim Phillips explains what went into the decision to announce an alliance today that can include scheduling and a number of other of really ambiguous points presented.
It's about trust. It's about we've looked each other in the eye. We've made an agreement. We have great confidence and faith. Our board chairs have looked each other in the eye and have committed to the same level of support and connection to one another. Our athletics directors have done that. And so if that's what it takes to get something considerable done, then, you know, we've lost our way. Of course, binding contracts serve a purpose. But at this juncture, that to us wasn't a critical element of it. And we'll certainly see where all this goes. But I know what we discussed. We all know what we discussed. And we're very confident about executing on all that's been described today.
Katie, you and I were both sitting around watching this Zoom, and there ended up being a whole lot of nothing concrete that came out of this, correct?
Yeah, I think I left with more questions than I did when I actually entered that press conference with the three commissioners from the Big Ten, the ACC, like we just heard from Jim Phillips, and the Pac-12. There was a lot of words being said, a lot of commitment and stability being thrown around. These three felt like there needed to be a response from Texas and Oklahoma moving into the SEC. They have now agreed as gentlemen that they will work together in terms of scheduling, that there will not be necessarily a financial component for them as of right now. Hopefully that will come down the road when they are able to schedule. But they want to create stability in the college athletics world right now where things feel really rocky. My understanding from Jim Phillips was, you know, back in 2011 when we saw conferences started to shake up and change, there was a domino effect to some of those moves, right? Everybody had a knee-jerk reaction, and they started making rash changes and trying to jump ship and get into different conferences. They don't want that to happen. They want everybody to stay put, stay calm, and say, hey, we're okay right now. Let's not start going around and poaching people from different conferences. And so these three want to be on the same team as it pertains to college football's playoff expansion to 12 teams and as it pertains to working together for the restructure of the NCAA come November.
Chenan Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr. with Katie Georgian. They did mention all of those points. They were also kind of wishy-washy on the money side of things here. What financial ties would there be amongst this group here? I can tell you one conference that is making no buts about that right now, and that is the Southeastern Conference, because while we got a bunch of kind of nothing burger from the Alliance, the SEC has floated this idea. They've yet to finalize their 2021 COVID-19 game cancellation policy, but I saw sources tell the Athletic league officials are discussing a potential financial penalty that could be applied, along with forcing a team to forfeit if it does not have a minimum players available. Essentially, if it's canceled, the game costs the league TV money, so the schools that would have to forfeit would then receive less from the conference's revenue sharing agreement than the schools that didn't have to forfeit games. And Katie, this sounds an awful lot like the NFL, who basically looked at the situation and say, hey, we're about protecting this money in this spot here, so you guys are going to do whatever it takes to get to there.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised by this move. All the other leagues have said that you will forfeit the contest if you can't field a team, while the SEC, being the SEC, is taking it even a step further because they want everybody to get a big piece of that pie. And when you can't play on television, well, you're losing everyone a little bit of money. This kind of ensures that that doesn't happen, right? Because they want to see vaccination numbers grow within teams. As of July, when they had SEC media days down in Alabama, Sankey said six of the SEC 14 teams had reached the league's recommended threshold of 80% vaccination. Now, that was back in July. We're almost a month from that point. Hopefully, you've seen more teams get vaccinated. I think Lane Kiffin said that his team was 100% vaccinated. Nick Saban said just one player from Alabama had yet to be vaccinated. Georgia's Kirby Smart recently said more than 90% of their scholarship players were vaccinated. And, you know, Auburn's coach said that they were right under 60%, so they had some more work to do. But as you're seeing right now in the SEC and the southeastern region of the country, vaccine percentages are low. So this is a way to incentivize teams, players, coaches, staffs to get the vaccine so that they can ensure that they are on the football field come Saturday.
That's what the goal is in that conference. Coming up next, though, we'll figure out what the goal was for the three in the Alliance here on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Chenan and Golick Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.